Good morning.
Good morning.
Yesterday we didn't succeed in covering the whole theme, time and space, in regard to the administration of therapies.
Yeah.
I hope that I can perhaps say tomorrow evening when we speak about addiction, and I still have to prepare it for the biggest part, but then I have something to tell about the working of the rhythms of the human being in the treatment. But today the theme of time and space comes back. Time and space in the making of medicaments, because that's the theme of today. The making of medicaments, working with warmth, that's space, and or that's on the border of space and eternity, and with time. I would like to start with a very high viewpoint. When Rudolf Steiner speaks to the young doctors about healing, he speaks it so in the fourth lecture of the Course for Young Doctors at Christmas 1924, he says that healing is done by spirits. Well, that was a very special moment for me to read that for the first time, that it really was as I had always thought. Thou healing spirits. So the meditation starts. And then it becomes apparent in the course of this deliberations that these healing spirits are elemental beings, beings from the nature. So, as we know them as the gnomes and the undines and the sylphs and the warm elemental beings, and you can have the question, where is the origin of the elemental beings? And then Rudolf Steiner tells us that they are the offspring of the hierarchies, of higher spiritual beings, the third hierarchy, the second hierarchy, and even the first hierarchy splits off certain beings, which are the elemental beings. How come? Well, Monday evening we heard a little bit already about it from Ross Ventea, when he described how when you start at the beginning of the creation in the womb, here. And then the creation sets forth, does the next step and comes to the air, that then you get this division that you had on the one side. The light. On the other side, the air, and Ross Ventea said, smoke, where it's densified, where it has become material. And Rudolf Steiner then says, if the creation is going on from warmth to air, then this materialization, this densification, is so that there. That it is necessary that also spirit is there, and that spiritual beings must make the sacrifice to go into this cage, into this jail. They are, so to say, banished. And in doing that, they are cut off of their origin. So all materialization in the course of time goes hand in hand with the banning, with the getting in jail of the elemental beings. And so it goes on. When it gets water, when it gets solid substance, time and again, elemental beings must make the sacrifice to remain with substance, so that it doesn't fall off from creation. And then Ursteiner asks, can you redeem again these elemental beings? And 4 years ago, some people will remember, I have spoken about that theme, how you can redeem the elemental beings. Because Ursteiner speaks about that in a lecture in Düsseldorf, where he says, for instance, in regard to these elemental beings, that you must try to look so in nature that you try to look to the essential of nature, to the gesture in nature, to, well, and through the gesture to the beings who make that gesture, and that are the elemental beings themselves. And then you meet them and redeem them. And you, then you can be remembered of the old sacrifices, where you saw the priest standing on the with the altar stone and making the fire, and there again was smoke. But into the smoke, the priest spoke his prayers, made his meditation, and through the warmth of the priest, through the smoke, the elemental beings could find their way back to the spirit. And then Ursteiner goes on and tells us, not only in the course of time the space was created with the air and the water and the solid substance, but also it was so that eternity densified into time. And that was done by creating the rhythms. So the rhythm of night and day, the rhythm of the new moon and the full moon, and the rhythm of the year, of the winter and the summer and the other seasons. And also that was only possible by the grace of certain elemental beings which made a sacrifice to go into the darkness of the night and in the darkness of the new moon and in the cold darkness of the winter. Because only if they did this deed could be this rhythm. And again there Rudolf Steiner gives indication how you can redeem these elemental beings. But we won't repeat that because we have done that already 4 years ago. So you have four realms of elemental beings, the elemental beings of space, which have to do with warmth, and the elemental beings of the day and the night, second, of the moon phases, third, and of the year, the fourth kingdom of elemental beings. And now there is a wonderful story where Rudolf Steiner speaks with Ita Wegman. Rudolf Steiner is already sick and is laying on his sick bed, and he suggests to Ita Wegman that she should lead it so far that she should make it possible that people would find a process through which you made out of peat a spinnable fezer. Out of peat.
A fiber.
A spinnable fiber. So that you could make clothes up of it. And he said, then if you would wear those clothes would protect you from influences which will more and more be in the surrounding of the earth, which will be a damage to the human health.
What damage?
Well, and now everybody knows which things are in the atmosphere of the earth. The radioactivity is one of the most important things. And it's also known if you cover the earth where you have sown seeds with peat, you protect them from radioactivity. That's well known. So one should make clothes of peat, and at last, since about 5-6 years, there is fiber where you can have this clothes of, and you are protected. But why? As an anthroposophist, I say it time and again, you have to understand things. Why? And then Eustanus says, this peat is a plant which doesn't wither away, which doesn't decay, but is mummified. And because it is mummified, an elemental being is banished in it and is not freed. But if you do something which has sense, which gives this substance a new destiny, then the elemental being is freed and is ready to do something for you. And that's an archetypal thing, that's an image for every making of medicaments. That you do something with nature so that it becomes a new destiny, that it comes into a new phase, and therefore the elemental beings are ready to do something for you. There's a little fairy tale which illustrates that. I think I have once told it, but it's a nice fairy tales you have to tell time and again. Foxglove. It's an Irish fairy tale. Foxglove was a little man, a wonderful man, but he had one problem. He had a very big hump on his back. And this hump was so big that he was bowed and he never could see the sun. But he was a happy man. He made baskets. And they were so very well that everybody in his village had already such a basket. So he had to go to other villages to sell his baskets. And one day he had gone very far. And when he returned to his village, he saw on the sun, which went down, that he wouldn't be in time back in his village. So when the sun really had gone down, he said, I make a rest. And I sleep here, and then I'll go back to my village. And there was a little hill, and he laid down at the foot of that hill, and he said his evening prayer and tried to sleep. But before he fell asleep, he heard music, wonderful music, and he listened and listened. But after some time, he said, well, it's a little bit always the same. There were, so to say, two lines which were always sung, and then he couldn't help it. He sang the third line. And then suddenly the hill was opened, and you saw a big hall with elves, and they were all very happy, and they came to Foxglove, because so the little man was called, because he always had on his head this foxglove, and invited him to come in and to have a feast. He sat on a wonderful chair, and they sang and danced for him, and at the end they said, we would like to give you a present. And then Foxglove said, I would like to have not anymore my hump. And then he lost his consciousness, and the next morning he awoke, and he said his morning prayer, and he stood up, and suddenly he could stand upright, and he saw the sun. He had lost his hump. Well, then the story goes on. He went back to his village, and nobody recognized him, and at last they thought, it's Foxglove. And then a woman who had this, a boy also with a hump, said, what has happened? And she said to her son, immediately go there and you sing. And well, he lay down, and they hardly had finished their two lines, and he sang three new lines, and the hill opened, and they very, very angry. They were not happy. You can't rush things. And next morning he had two humps, because he had got the hump of foxglove also. That's a wonderful image, that if you do something to nature as a human being, then you are healed, or then there is healing. I once told this story in England, and then there I met a woman who said, well, that's interesting that you tell this story, because we just are doing foxglove as a puppet play. And do you know what the elves are singing? It's Gaelic. And they sing, if you translate it into the language you understand, they sing Sunday, Monday, and then Monday, Tuesday, and then they start again. Sunday, Monday, Monday, Tuesday. And what did Fox Club sing? Tuesday, Wednesday. He went from Mars to Mercury. Yeah. It's most wonderful. Later on, I discovered, and I hope that I may tell it here, that the Beatles knew that, the singers. They sing it in Sunday is on the phone to Monday. Tuesday is on the phone to me. Yeah. So, if you bring the nature one step further, then you redeem the elemental beings, and then there is healing. And that is the background of the things I want to tell you now. Because in anthroposophical medicine, the most important thing is what you do with substance, not substance itself. Of course, you need the substance, you need the chamomile, you need the copper, you need all those substances which are offered to us, given to us to work with. But the most important thing in anthroposophical medicine is the treatment of substance so that it becomes a healing substance. Because chamomile is healing, but you must make a tea of it. And so every substance, you have to do something with it. And Rudolf Steiner says once in a lecture, when is a substance healing? A substance is healing when you bring it on its way to the spirit. When you work with it so that it becomes, you could say, humanized. That it comes back to its origin. Because the human being and all the substance of the earth have a common origin. And preparing the substance is bringing it together to the human being again. Bringing it to the spirit, you could say, is first bringing it from the physical to the etherical realm. And that you can do in two ways. There are two paths to the etheric. And the one path is bringing it in the realm of the warmth, and the other path is bringing it in time, in rhythms. And warmth has to do with space, and the rhythms have to do with time. And that are just the two ways of anthroposophical preparations of substance to become medicament, to come into the situation that they can talk with the human organism again, because they start to have the same language. Now the warmth. There are I'll go through these warm stages. The first is what is called the extractio, or the maceratio. You take a plant and you bring it into water or alcohol or something like that, and you let it in the same temperature. So that is a cold extraction. Yeah, and I must say something about warmth before I go on. The human being is a warmth being. You have other warmth beings that are the mammals, but with the human being it has gone one step further. The human being is not only, it has this equal warmth of so and so much degrees Fahrenheit and 37 degrees Celsius, but it's the difference between the animals and the human being is that the human being is naked. All animals have, so to say, a protecting layer, fat in the whales, or a fur with the bears, or feathers with birds. Only the human being has no coat. And that's the reason that he has this wonderful color, where Russell and Thea spoke about, this pink peach blossom color, because the warmth organism goes to the border and is in direct contact with the world. That's the next step. And therefore, these warmth preparations bring the substance to the man, to the human being, as a warmth being. And the human being has several provinces, several warmth differentiations in itself. And there's one part where it's cold. And where is that? It's in the head. So if you use warm, cold extractions, you work on that part where the human being is cold. So if you use arnica for the head, you mustn't boil it, but you must make a cold extraction of arnica. And if you want to use the leaves of a birch tree, you must make a cold extraction. You must not boil it, otherwise you won't have your effect on that part where just a human being is cold and you want to treat him. So warmth and cold extractions work on that part of the human being where he has his nervous sense system, where he has his formative powers. Next step is the digestio. Hoeveel is 37 graden in Fahrenheit? 19. That's the blood temperature. That's new introduced by Rudolsteiner, this digestio, as a making of medicaments. Earlier times it said you must put the bottle in cow dung or horse dung. Or you must not go above the temperature with which the hen broods his chicken, her chicken. Yeah? And Paracelsus called it the sun digestio. So they were all very enthusiastic about it. And if you look what happens, you can see why. You have a bottle, and here you have the cow dung, or a water bath, or how you want to say it. And then there is a liquid. And what happens, this liquid is evaporating, and then it condenses again, and falls down again. It rains down again. And then it evaporates again. So what you have is solve et coagule.
in alchemistic terms. It evaporates and it condenses again. You see what happens? That's a sort of breathing. Breathe out and breathe in. It's something like a diastole and a systole. It's all rhythm. Because it is closed. There's something on. So what you have here, have you the warmth. Here you have the cold or the solid situation. Here have you have the water, and here you have the air. And it, or you could say, here you have sulfur, here you have mercury, and here you have salt. It all belongs to this digestion. So you have something like the circulation of the water, becoming air and becoming water again. This is the mercury process. This is the process of the dew drop, the digestion. The Blättermargen. And it was called the Mercury of Paracelsus, because he much liked this process. And it's not difficult to understand, where do you aim at if you make a digestion? You aim at the rhythmical processes in the human organism. So it is especially for the circulation. So cardiodoron must be a digestion. Digestodorum, which aims at the rhythmical processes of the intestines, must be a digestion. Convallaria, you must make a digestion of it. So if you make a digestion of certain substances, then you will have an effect on the rhythmical processes. I'm sorry that I must stop and go on with the next, because I would like to talk a whole hour about this digestio. The third is making a tea, and that is infusio. An herb tea. So chamomile or ferrotamnus or achillea or absinthe or whatsoever. So you have boiling water, and then you stop boiling it and you put mostly the plants and mostly the flowers in it. And then you have, just as you had here, working on the rhythmical system, then you work on the mucosa of the organs. So, for instance, is mucosa, that's the right word?
Yeah,
mucous membranes of the stomach, or of the sinuses, of the lungs. Oh, there is the effect of the working with teas. Next phase is boiling. Decoctio. So you make a decoct, for instance, of seeds or of roots, because otherwise the effect is not, there's not enough movement. As you remember yesterday, you must always bring things into movement. So if you make a decoctio of, let us say, the seeds of carom carvi,
caraway,
or you make a decoction of the bark of the birch tree, or you make a decoction of the root of the sickery. There you work on the digestive processes. Yeah, that's still deeper. That part of the organism where You are boiling yourself, cooking yourself. Then the next step is roasting. Or toasting. Pasta. For instance, equisetum cum sulfure tost. You take the equisetum and you bring it on the temperature of, well, 180 graden Celsius. Hoeveel is dat ongeveer? It's higher and higher. 350. But you must cover it so that the aromatic substances come down. So you make it sulfuric. Cum sulfure. Or spongia tosta. You have a sponge and you toast it.
Is that made with sulfur added though?
No. You make it sulfuric. As far as I know, you don't add sulfur to it. But I'm not 100% sure. Well, if you have roasted a thing, it's easier to digest it. You know it. If you take a toast, it's easier to digest. So you are easier bringing it into the toasting, in the digestive processes. Well, I'll say it very short, and you have the distillatio. I'm saying the things you wanted to say it or not. Okay. So that you bring the vaporous substances, especially the etheric oils, out of it. For the digestive processes. And the distillatio, you get the etheric oils. And the etheric oils, that are the oils which are oils which have much hydrogen in itself. That's the warmest substance that there is, but also the lightest substance, the substance which is in high up in the air, high up in the sky, which is very peripheral, which it's very near to the spiritual world, so to say. Rusana says if you make a substance to air, then you bring it out of space. If you make it still, then you bring it into the soul world. If you make a substance still warmer, warmer and warmer, then you even bring it out of the world of time, and you bring it into the spiritual world. Well, that's nearly so with the etheric oils. You bring it to the world which is very high, and if you use etheric oils, you are calling upon the ego organization, which is also the highest organization of us. So if somebody is going to faint, then you give him Melisse, Melissengeist, yeah? The spirit of Melisse. Is it there also in America and so? Yeah?
Well, only. Not commonly, only in...
It's very known also by everyone in Holland. Melisana. Because you can put it here, or you take a little map. Some people are addicted to it. Or if you have a pneumonia, then you can also use this etheric oils. Give some little bit every hour, because then you call upon the ego organization to be there, that the house is not getting burnt down. And then you have the, as the seventh process, the carbo and the sinis. Then the temperature is still higher, and in the first case you cover it so that the air does not enter. You know how you make charcoal, and that you can make charcoal of every substance if you want it. You can make it from every plant. And the other is that you let it have a high temperature and it is open to the world, and then you make ashes. And they have different effects. If you make coal, then you will still have the formative forces remaining in the substance. You can see it also. Because the coal, the carbo is so to say the frame of every plant. It's so to say the building stone of the form of every plant, made by the light. So if somebody is losing his form, then you can give carbo. And you give, if he is losing his form of the kidney, then you give him carbo equiseti. And so you can use the different forms of the different plants in their carbo form to bring back light and form to that organ. And to let it breathe again also. That's to say it very short. One indication I would like to say, if you have, for instance, acne, on the face, then you can give carbo e sanguine animalis. You know, you get this acne by using animal food. And now you give some extra structure to it. And the ashes, they have to do with a process which is taking place also in our lungs. So all sinus preparations, sinus veronica or sinus chamomile, they have to do with the breathing process in us. And so you can...
I wanted to ask a question about carbo and its relationship to form. For instance, in the kidney, would you use it where the form has become like a Schrumpfnieren?
For instance.
Where it's become distorted, or more where it's inflamed and this loss of form? It's swollen and inflamed.
I think you can... in my experience, I have especially used it where you have nephrosis. Mm-hmm. But... I could think that you could also use it in inflammation, but I've never done it because I've used other things.
Yes.
But we should think that over. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the one is the picture of a form that's become distorted.
Yeah.
And another is the picture of a form that's gotten lost to swelling and dissolution. It's kind of opposite.
Yes, there's opposite. So I think only one. Yeah. So, using these seven possibilities of warmth treatment, what do you do then? You are working with the elemental beings of the first class. And you are redeeming them. You are, so to say, like the priest who speaks his prayers into the smoke. And there, that's one of the backgrounds where through which these medicaments can work, because you really redeem the elemental beings. And the other possibility is to work with time, to work with the rhythms. And then you are coming into the sphere of Mercury, because you know the symbol of Mercury are those two snakes which show a rhythm. And you can take into account this time, or this working with time, for instance, by thinking, when should I harvest a certain plant? So when should I harvest, for instance, flowers? So that I take into account the process of flowering. And I think you must harvest flowers not at the highest point of the day, but on the way to the highest point. So a little bit before 12. And when should you harvest roots? Well, when they are at their rootest. When they are the most root, at the time of the day, when it's getting night, yeah? When the whole earth is contracting. Or at the end of the year, of course. When do you have to harvest leaves? In Blättermorgen. The meditation, Rudolf Steiner speaks about the morning of the leaves, where they have still dewdrops. Because they are the mercury organs of the plant, the dewdrop organs. The dewdrop carries the secrets of the night in the day. So the leaves you must harvest in the morning. And every pharmacist knows the secrets of every plant. That you have, for instance, to harvest the bark of the oak tree when it is a little bit farther on in the spring, when nearly the leaves are getting out. That's the moment for the oak bark, or the blossoms of the belladonna when they start to wither away, and so on and so on. So that's the time of harvesting which you take into account. And you make a reference and say, hello, will you come with me? The other possibility is that you take, for instance, the rhythm of the day and the night. And there is this wonderful indication of Rudolf Steiner that you accept the grace which lays in the morning and the evening. And that you let the substance go to through the processes of the sunrise and the going down of the sun. And that are all the preparations of the Vala, who take into account all the warmth processes and all the light processes of the day. And that's also done in the Vilida with the RH preparations. They are a little bit different because there are different thoughts about it with the Vilida and the Vala. We won't go into that details and who is right and who is not right, but they both work with this elements of what is happening when you go from the night to the day and when you go from the day to the night. There are very special moments. We all know it. Also ourselves, because that's the best time to do your inner exercises, because you are going from one realm into another realm, and on this threshold there happen this special things. So there you take into account the rhythm of night and day, and you work with the elemental beings of the second group. But you can also work with the rhythm of the year. which is done, for instance, by the making of Iskadar, which takes the winter sap and the summer sap and mixes it together. But it's also done with Cardiodorum, which takes a plant from the spring and a plant from the late summer and brings them together. And then you have this wonderful working with the rhythm of the year with the so-called vegetabilized metals. You take a certain metal and let it go through four preparations before you have brought it so far that you can use it as a dung to bring on the earth. As a dung. It's a mist, a compost. So if you have copper, you can't use it and spread it on the earth because you make the plants sick. But you must bring it, well, to say it so, to the Saturn phase, to the moon phase, to the sun phase and the earth phase, and therefore are special chemical processes, which Rufsteiner indicated. And then and after the fourth phase, you have a metal salt, which you can make fine, can rub, and then potentize to D4, and with that you sprinkle the earth. And there you sow then in a special plant. For instance, if you have put in the an iron salt in the soil, you can sow, for instance, urtica or chelidonium, and then you let grow the plant the whole year, and at the end of the year you cut it, you mow it, and then you bring it all together and make a compost of it. And you do it in a earthen pot, even. And after the winter, you bring it out again and put it as compost over the earth. And again you sow urtica. And let it grow again the whole year. And at the end of the year, you mow it again. You make a compost again. And the next summer, next spring, you bring it as compost on the same earth. And again you sow urtica, and then at the end of the third year, this plant you use. And then you have ferrum per urticam. That is an incredible thing. A normal human brain cannot think that out. You must have a connection with the other world to find such a thing. That you bring the evolution in the reverse direction. Because now a mineral is becoming a plant again. Yes, that's the question. But how? By breathing three times. A rhythmical process. But not only breathing three times, also in the year about 280 times, 280 days. Yeah? Going through night and day. The time that the plant blossoms. Now there's a wonderful little secret. If you do a potentizing with a substance, and you throw it up and let it come down again, and you throw it up and let it come down again, it's known out of experiments that you do it about 3 minutes long, and that's the optimum. If you do it longer, it doesn't get better. So after 3 minutes you stop. Do you know how many times you have done that? 280. Just as many times as the plant has gone through this process of vegetabilizing the metal. Now I would like to speak at the same time as I now speak about this vegetabilized metal of the other principle that Rudolf Steiner indicated for as a totally new method of making medicaments, because they belong together. And in the same time as Rudolf Steiner spoke about this new pharmaceutical principle, he spoke of another principle where you make a plant to a mineral. And that are the so-called solutio preparations. And that's the startling suggestion of Rudolf Steiner to make synthetic plants. You wouldn't expect it.
He was way ahead of his time.
Yeah. You wouldn't expect it that Rudolf Steiner would suggest synthesized plants. But what did he suggest? He said, what you have to do is that you see which substances are essential in a plant. You must make an analysis. For instance, in the nettle, the essential are the iron and the sulfur. Or in other plants, the alkaline substances. And then you bring those two or three or four essential substances together, and you must have fetched them in nature, not out of a factory, but you must have the pure substances, so iron you take out of pyrites, for instance.
Pyrites.
You must, there's a special procedure that you take the iron out of the pyrites. And then you have the sulfur, and then you bring it together, not in a chemical reaction, but you have some bringing together substance. For instance, you can use harsh
resin.
Or you can use linseed and linseed extraction. So you knit it together with a plant substance. So you make a sort of new living combination. And this combination of mineral substances has a deeper working on the organism than the plant itself. And that's not difficult to understand. At least if I have been clear enough, you know that mineral substances work on the ego organization and plant substance on the astral body. The ego organization have to do much more work to humanize the mineral substance than the astral body has to do to humanize the plant substance. And therefore, the effect is deeper. So if you start, for instance, at a patient treating with urtica dioica, with the nettle, you make it him easy to start with, and then when he has getting used to it and it's easy for him to speak with the nettle, then you say, now you get solutio fericum, the synthetic nettle. And that's different from how normally synthetic preparations are made. Because if normally if you make a synthetic preparation, you take all the substances there are. And Rudolf Steiner only takes the substances which are essential. So in the one case you get a photograph, and in the other case you get a piece of art, where you see the essential things, where you have, so to say, a photographic portrait or the portrait of an artist. So it's just opposite, these two things, the vegetabilized metals and the solutio preparations. They are in their way of coming into existence opposite. Yes, by ash. I've made, together with three colleagues and a pharmacist, and together with Walter Kloos, who was the great inventor of making into practice these preparations, I've made together with him a new medicament of belladonna. We made a belladonna composition. And we did this, all the analyses ourselves, or the Willidar, and sometimes some of these analyses we had to ask to other laboratories. And then together with Walter Kloos and even Dr. Treichler, we decided which were the most important substances. So we made together the picture. And so we work with that belladonna Kloos, we call it, since 5 years, and it's a wonderful medicament, but it's not common yet. Yes. You even have, and that's the last thing I can say, in this vegetabilized metals, which were suggested by Rudolf Steiner and then brought into reality by Walter Kloos, he found himself, together with Otto Wolf and Rudolf Treichler, the combination between a metal and a plant. And it is interesting that if you look at these vegetabilized metals, you see, for instance, that they have very much to do with time. For instance, to do with the biography of the human being. If you, for instance, you can use argentum per bryophyllum. You can use cuprum per chamomillum. You can use ferrum per chelidonium. You can use ferrum per urticum. You can use aurum per primulam, and I write it now down in this sequence for a special reason. Young children, you wouldn't give so very quick metals as such. You better give them in this form. You can understand, it's easier, yes? Because you give them as a plant. And now, if you look back, if you have the possibility, as I have, to look back into your experience of nearly 30 years practicing, then you find suddenly, you come to the conclusion, Argentum Perpetuum Film I've given to the very young children. Not Ferrum per Urticam. Cuprum per Chamomilam, also to the very young children who couldn't sleep, who had cramps in their stomach. This is for babies. Ferrum per Chelidonium, that's a typical remedy for the 9-year-old child. Ferrum per Urticam, that's for puberty. And Aurum per Primum is also for puberty. So you find these, well, a personal suggestion, these remedies have a relation to time, to the biography. That's the one thing. The other thing is that you have then, and I think I've told that once before, you have stannum per taraxacum, and you have stannum per sigorium. And you have aurum per primulam, and you have aurum per hypericum. Now, taraxacum, is it in Engels? Dandelion, that's a plant of the spring. Chicory is a plant of late summer. Primulam is a plant of spring. Hypericum you have now, yeah, just like the chicory. When the year has gone through its highest point. And I've found that in spring, many plants are, so to say, nourishing plants. They are coming from, they are in the Stoffstrom. How do you say that?
Substance.
The substance stream. And in late summer and in the autumn, then they are in the form stream. They are making form. Now that's just what Taraxacum does. He is in the Stoffstream. He is nourishing. And the chicory is totally different, yes? He has hardly any leaves anymore. He's forming. And Primula is nourishing. And Hypericum is again forming. It's as esterilizing. So you see, I don't know why Kloos has done that. He has now died, so I can't ask him anymore. But he has brought two principles which are a little bit opposite in the same direction. And in this way you can use it. If somebody has become too much winter, you must give him the spring. And if somebody has got too much summer, you must give him the autumn. Yeah? To work with time. And working with time, in the way I tried to describe, is it is to redeem the elemental beings who have to do with time and to bring them back to their origin. And then they will work together with the human being. And if the world is coming to working together, then that means healing. Yeah, Peter.
Question: did I understand correctly that the relator doesn't add the metal to the soil at any time?
Oh yes,
they do.
For this vegetabilizing of metals, you have to add the metal to the soil at the beginning. The second year not anymore, and the third year not anymore. But at the beginning you have to add it.
As a salt.
As a salt, yes. And, yeah, that depends. But there is a certain process through which it goes, and then you must dissolve it, that it's not too much. But they use still the salts Klaus has made. Yeah.
Where does the trit process come?
The trit. Well, the trit ratio, that is that you don't use water, but that you use lactose. And then you must, that's a wonderful thing to do. Then you go. But it takes an hour for every potency.
One of the things that has always puzzled me about the process of potentization has to do, you spoke, I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before, about the fact that the process of potentization affects not only the substance, but the material, the medium.
Yeah.
Equally, until in the end both are equally involved. And yet, we often tend to use, you know, if you haven't got Agentin D8 drops, so you use the powder. I mean, at least I often do that. And I think it would actually be an important step to distinguish this potentization process, how it affects a liquid medium, such as alcohol and water, differently from a solid medium, such as powder, that we come a little further in this, because I can't help believing that process is different if the medium is a substance medium, a dry medium like the powder, as compared to a liquid medium. And I think we could come a step further in our pharmacology if we had a better understanding of the difference between when you use a trituratio and when you use a dilutio, for example.
So, wonderful working question. Would be something for next year, to think it over and then to come back on it on an afternoon. What's the difference between the ratio and the solutio? Would that be nice? You must always give yourself, you must always put questions to each other. And then after a year, when you have worked, then you come together. That's the best way to form a community. Putting questions, a little group of people takes up this question and brings it as a present to the next PEM conference. Would be wonderful. Because you see, you need much more time. I once made a preparation for Cohorst disease and needed D6, and you couldn't potentize it with water, so it took me 6 hours. And I did it wrong, so it didn't work at all. Yeah. Was there another question? Yes.
What is the final process when you eventually pulverize metal? When you have the plant harvested, what do you do with it? Do you take it through the digestio or?
You can put it through the digestio if you, for instance, would take this aurum preparations. Mostly they make an RH preparation of it, because it's such a pity if you would bring this wonderful process into alcohol. So often there are made RH preparations of it, and then you have only percentages, not potentizing it, because it has been potentized already. I explained that. So it is not necessary to potentize it on.
What we have in the U.S. of those preparations are almost all in liquid form, and they are with alcohol. There's 18%, 12%. But
not the RH preparation.
No, not the RH, but the vegetabilized metals. Once they're dispensed here in liquid, all the amphils are produced by RH.
Yeah. Well, the last thing I would like to say is, you see, it's a wonderful a garden through which we have walked this morning. And if you know a little bit of this garden, you have a new relation to your medicaments. You prescribe them in a different way. You can give them in another way, what Rudolf Steiner said, the soul. And so I have found that it is a great help if you as a doctor make at least one or two medicaments yourself a year. Be it a coughing syrup or an ointment or an extraction or whatsoever. That you have it in your fingers. That you know what it is all about. And it's even nicer if you do it with your patients together, in a little course. For instance, in spring, harvesting the leaves of a birch tree and making birch elixir. Or something else. So I would strongly advise you to make at least one or two medicaments yourself a year, so that you have your relation to substance and to the process of making medicaments. Because then you have also the chance that you find new things. Because inspiration is always coming from the elemental beings. All fairy tales were told by the elemental beings to the human beings. And so I think that Paracelsus had also the little people as his friends.